This podcast is brought to you by the Lawton Unit, Department of War Studies, King's College London. The Lawton Unit podcast enables researchers, academics, and naval and maritime thinkers to present their research, opinions, and views on a range of topics from naval history to contemporary defense and security questions. In this podcast, James W. E. Smith describes the role of naval historians and the challenges that they have faced in post-1945, particularly in the United Kingdom, when attempting to further understanding of maritime strategy and the importance of the study of history to the naval service. In the 21st century, we are questioning, debating, and even arguing over every aspect of the Royal Navy's past or future. In the United Kingdom, maritime strategy, once the proven staple of British defence, has been relegated to the sidelines. Meanwhile, in the United States, naval thinkers are a ball of anxious and nervous contention, constantly looking over their shoulders, wondering if what they are doing or planning is the correct course of action. Considering the generations of today, uniformed or otherwise, have unparalleled access to the wisdom, knowledge and experience of their forebears, why do we find ourselves on both sides of the Atlantic more trusting of naval thinking in the past than today? Many thinkers across a range of academic and intellectual fields would accept the challenge of this question, using the modern obsession to claim we now face more complex situations. They would remind us that modern warfare is more sophisticated than ever before. This hyperbole distracts from the fact many challenges we face are similar to, or even less than, previous generations repetitively faced. Historians would argue that this approach is distraction from the doubts and fear of potential mistakes, unknowns or wildly random ideas that we may have written, taught and accepted into our military thinking because we devalued the study of history itself. This is because naval history is both a process and a record that sets the baseline for all aspects of the naval service to allow it to advance, while providing running commentary on its progress. If used wisely, this vast collection of experiences, actions and their results can empower navies to avoid perils and pitfalls of the past while enabling them to be sufficiently bold to plan for today and tomorrow. To understand the value of studying history is to first understand that the experience of the past are a vast repository of wisdom that the modern sailor or naval thinker can immerse themselves in to gain insights and perspective on both the process and the possible solutions that have been used before. Neither technical change nor inter-service or political challenges provide reason to ignore this potent tool, because the past remains the only real experience available to the sailor of today. Secondly, as British naval historian Julian Corbett critically highlighted, the forum of intellectual discussion and the study of history acts as a vehicle to further strategic objectives and act as a persistent, often nagging stick to push and prod the naval service forward. Historians are guided by this tested approach, leading them to query why, now that this vast repository of wisdom that is the past is more accessible than ever before, still questions and doubts exist over our capability for thinking, fighting, maritime strategy and naval policy in the modern era. In some quarters, and especially among historians, some wonder if Western states are still equipped to create robust, efficient and effective maritime strategy. This is an exceptionally difficult proposition to accept, considering the Royal Navy has taken a leading role in creating that record and deploying it to develop naval theory while being one of the world's most successful fighting forces. The simple answer is that the system of studying and educating through history was removed from their intellectual arsenal. This is problematic for the service, and British thinkers who created the field of naval history and laid the foundations of maritime strategy that remain the staple of naval thinking around the world. This leadership would go on to shape new historians and strategists, including American Alfred Mahan, who elegantly summed up their work in 1911, "The study of military history lies at the foundation of all sound military conclusions and practices." John Lawton's leadership of the naval intellectual revolution that started in the 19th century focused on creating the field of naval history and operationalizing the study of history and the role of historians to develop doctrine for the Royal Navy. It was certainly not luck that at the height of naval intellectual development in the first half of the 20th century, naval intelligence, historical research, and the Admiralty Board shared a common ethos both in theory and practice. If the heart of the Royal Navy was in its personnel, its brain was the concert of the intellectual discussion around the form of intelligence, history, and decision-making. Corbett's caution about learning lessons was constrained to tactics and service doctrine, in which he realised would need to change as technology shaped warfare and discarding irrelevant material if appropriate. The benchmark for being forward-looking was identified when not long after Corbett had published the classic text, Some Principles of Maritime Strategy, in 1911, that he recognised that it needed updating. This was not just because of how warfare can so easily evolve, but the intellectual enlightenment that professional historical methodologies had enabled him to recognise how naval warfare can and had changed, and that theory would always need to respond to it. Meanwhile, the more critical and easily translatable message of Lawton, Corbett, and Mahan's methodology is that to gain confidence in our thinking to meet the challenges of today and tomorrow, we need to understand the processes of strategic decision-making in the past. The work of this intellectual forum in the decades between 1890 and 1914 gave history influence what would become an important element in the success of the Royal Navy and the United States Navy through many of the 20th century's challenges. By embedding the study of history in debates and decision-making, the Royal Navy provided the platform to elevate the service to an unprecedented success, yet seasoned with just enough failure to avoid complacency. Mahan and Corbett may have become well-known names in military circles, but they, in conjunction with Lawton, struggled against collective and willful neglect, if not pure ignorance, of the naval past, even in their eras. Yet success and technological change post-1945 saw both the UK and US become complacent about their maritime defences, with the convoluted naval narrative focused on just the drama of events. The post-1945 move away from historical base paralleled the trends of the previous century. It was to combat such present-minded technological-led thinking that Lawton, Mahan and Corbett created these classic texts of naval history. It was a history for navies, not a mere chronology of events to edify the public or a new midshipman. It serves as a pertinent and timely reminder to keep investing both effort, time and education to the thinking machinery of the naval service, and if not the wider armed forces. Yet restoring confidence in our naval thinking today is a challenge for both nations, and the Royal Navy's situation of its intellectual prowess is far grimmer. Maritime strategy and history has become a sentimental pastime, and the service disconnected from its heritage, and it's finding itself pandering to every whim of the other services. It is the pertinent example of the disaster of removing the study of history from the defence machinery of the nation, and how easy it is to fall from having leading-edge intellectual prowess that should be promulgating through a coherent national strategy, as Julian Corbett achieved in 1911. Even if Britain cannot be the leading naval power by strength, which of course is a question of resource, it should retain its intellectual mastery of maritime strategy because it still is a major maritime power, and needs to be, of course being dependent on oceanic commerce for vital supplies of food and fuel, let alone its security and its future prosperity. Britain's relationship with Europe and the wider world makes Britain be even more maritime. It should send the nation back to the experience of acting alone in an uncertain world and provides a stable platform for any future challenges that should occur for the country in the future. To understand how the Royal Navy got into this grim position is to reflect over the state of post-Second World War naval affairs. British historians recognise that post-1945 mistakes have been made within the field itself. The ejection of naval history from the modern Defence Ministry machinery and the embracement of certain other disciplines may have been the cause of some of today's issues. In the UK, its Navy and historians were being challenged by the dogmatic pupils of delusional air power theorist Lord Trenchard, who encouraged all-out service rivalry over maritime strategy via what was known in 1917 as the Smuts Report, and it led the way to the creation of the Royal Air Force in 1918. In the 1950s, Air Marshal Slessor had picked up the baton and used the popular opinion of the Air Force to renew attacks on the naval service. At the same time, the Royal Navy was facing accusations of irrelevance of their apparently older methods, such as those proposed by Corbett, who were deemed as outdated and not suited for modern times. The Royal Navy was not only facing the crisis of a self-absorbed and opportunist Earl Mountbatten and Britain's growing economic and social issues, but also that naval historians had abandoned Lawton's first principle of naval history. To work on subjects of interest to the contemporary Navy were employing the rigour of academia. Meanwhile, the Ministry of Defence was purging many of the fundamental coherences and administrative traditions that were vital to develop the Royal Navy doctrine, which included the role of historians. British historians in the following decades would retreat to what would seem as the archetypal stereotype of a historian, a predilection over small issues and debating the greatest of irrelevancies with little public or governmental interaction. Rightfully, some historians built the museums of today, educate the public and shine a light on the bravery and sacrifice of past generations. However, the thinking, fighting, theorist style of historian akin to Corbett and Lawton seemingly vanished, while the Royal Navy would go through what was essentially the terror of the decades of post-Admiralty 1960s British defence policy. This targeted elimination of the British Admiralty contributed to the fundamental disconnect in the role of the historian to the creation of theory and the dismantling of Britain's intellectual naval prowess. Without a naval voice at the highest level in defence and politics, there was no chance that history would gain a hearing, particularly not in naval circles. Studying post-1945 history would continue to be overlooked as many, even the historical profession holding it in near contempt. Many, of course, forgetting that humans remember and bond more with living memory of the few recent generations than that of an age that increasingly slips further behind modern day. This attitude, demonstrating ignorance to Lawton's advice of how the military and public must be kept engaged, requires historians to stay in step. After all, the equipment and events of the latter 20th century resembles and resonates with today's military and political life, more so than perhaps the Age of Sail, for example. It is no coincidence that as historians have been removed from the intellectual form of defence, that the development of naval theory and the use of maritime strategy has weakened. The fact that historians are no longer influenced in the Navy and wider defence debates, particularly in the United Kingdom, has propelled us into these 21st century doubts and adversely pushed Britain away from having maritime strategy. Although this may be an oversimplification, it is certainly a factor. While in the United States, historians have found it increasingly difficult and challenging to find a consistent path for historians to have a voice at the highest levels. In both nations, policy through to doctrine, tactics and other aspects of defence, intelligence and foreign involvement has become largely reactive to events. Today's so-called system of defence education and debate effectively ignores Corbett or Mahan's approach to the way Navy should do business. The older system that was considered so outdated protected British defence to far greater extent than today's hackneyed institutional mantras and rigid, unfound concepts. A continually refined, educated intellectual forum may be conscribed to the past, and yet the fate of the Royal Navy and the breaking of the continued suppression of British naval thinking now may very well rest upon it. British naval historians missed the opportunity post-war to respond to other influences, disciplines and fields entering British naval thinking in the post-war era. The greatest advert to the politician and decision maker of why studying naval history is important is to communicate that those who choose to focus more on naval theory, such as Mahan and Corbett did, are by default futurists. These are people looking to the future. Corbett, having gained insight through sustained reflection in the past, produced timely and potent perspectives for both his time, his era of study, and decision makers facing similar problems in different times. It was about continually looking forward. Reflecting on the modern era, we can see an example of how historians of another era were studying the past, but have some timely remarks that is valid for them as they are for us today. They may study the past, but they are studying what is required to understand today. Lawton and later Corbett were concerned of how and where a Navy would develop its theory when it went without war fighting it had been designed for, or when it quickly had to adapt to an operational tempo that resulted in it foregoing other commitments, challenges and training. They feared excessive terminology, overbearing knee-jerk doctrine and the parachuting of names and heroes just to form some abstract concept and give it some form of validity. Lawton feared a service where operational tempo or a lack of warfighting broke the ability to reflect, reform, and train while critically thinking. All at the same time, the Navy, in a period of high intensity or lack of challenge, had to maintain a continual sense of self-identity and self-promotion while maintaining an intellectual community. The Navy's victory was all the harder to earn because of the risk of disaster from complacency. To understand naval theory is to understand that it is a continually self-reflecting but forward-evolving process. To move forward, we must look back to enable us to have the skill to meet whatever demands and challenges we face tomorrow. To study naval history was to avoid complacency and support naval evolution, because without doing so was to risk that some other player on the seas would outthink you, jeopardizing command of the seas and the ability to influence land, air, and space. If we chose in our era to place value on training the educational or keeping the discipline of the study of history close to our core naval thinking machinery, then the ability to deliver a successful fighting force, itself a hybrid of thinking and fighting sailor, can become a reality. But if we do choose, then we should be aware that in the West, our way of business seems that we choose, learn, and relearn something, a depressing reality that the Royal Navy battles with daily across all of its activities. In Britain post-1964, the nation became blissfully ignorant to that the successful strategies of the past were developed and rooted in the study of its own past. To continue the legacy of success and keep the British Isles, its interests and territory secure, or supporting our allies and maintaining the peace, we must study history without the misguided fear that we embrace all of those past wrongs by doing so. It would take at least until 2001 for the British to start to consider talking about naval history as a tool for military thinking again. Although British naval doctrine, known as BR 1806, gave some hints and inspiration that some form of intellectual process was taking place, it was not the answer that some had been looking for. By comparison, in the May of 1917, British Admiral Jellicoe, victor of the Battle of Jutland, welcomed Admiral William Sims of the US Navy to Britain, stating that there was no navy in the world that can possibly give Britain more valuable assistance. It becomes more clear that a century on, it quite could possibly be that maintaining world peace and command of the seas would be significantly enhanced by rebuilding British naval thinking and the strength of America's Navy.